This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 5th of September 2015 on Monocle 24.
Independent, individual and in demand, the indie magazine scene is in full flower in Hamburg. Remote, sparsely populated, yes, but Iceland reveals a proud tradition of print publishing. That's all to come today on The Stack. On this episode of the program, we'll be hearing from some of the rising stars of the independent magazine industry as this predominantly young crowd met in Hamburg last week for the annual IndieCon gathering.
Bringing up this conference is just about bringing people together who are in love with magazines.
Actually, we are maybe not so much passionate about the magazines, but about the people who make them.
Then we'll transport ourselves to Iceland to reveal a nation that is as magazine mad as ever. From the Viking sagas to Danish gossip rags, Icelanders can't stop poring over the printed word.
We have a big appreciation for paper because we're a book country and we read a lot and we appreciate our books. Instead of like some fancy lamp, we have a fancy book.
All that coming up and plenty more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack. It's me, Ben Ryland, bringing you the show today. Last weekend, Hamburg hosted the second annual independent magazine conference, IndieCon 2015. And last week, we heard from Malte Brenneisen, one of the organisers, just as he was setting up. And now we bring you a report from what is an increasingly influential magazine gathering. Over the course of 2 days, the makers and movers of the independent magazine industry came together to ask the question, what is indie? From London's Mag Culture founder and friend of The Stack, Jeremy Leslie, to Ibrahim Neme of The Outpost, to Flaneur magazine's Johannes Konrad, Monocle's Marie-Sophie Schwarzer brings us this report from Hamburg.
The last weekend of summer saw the second edition of the independent magazine conference IndieCon take place at the historic Heinrich Heine Villa in Hamburg. Over 2 days, 150 large and small indie magazine publishers and editors assembled in the wooden-floored halls of the Alster-facing mansion to discuss the state of print and answer the question, what is indie? We met up with the makers and shakers of the industry to find out what the mood in the industry is like and what sets indie mags apart and keeps them afloat. Here to set the scene is Jeremy Leslie, creative director and founder of Mag Culture.
I really like the location. It's difficult on radio, but it's a kind of old classic villa with wood paneling. It's very, very beautiful old building. And in a way, it's an interesting context for an indie festival to happen. It's not what you would expect, but it's all the better for it. One of the great things about these kind of events is hearing people's personal stories about how they came to be making the magazine, what they hope, what they've learned from it. You always unearth this kind of love-hate relationship, and if you catch them at the wrong moment when they're in the middle of producing an issue, they'll tell you how awful it is, and then as soon as they get the issue back to the printer, they're back in love, you know.
And do you think it's an especially exciting time to be in the magazine industry?
It's a really exciting time to be involved in the publishing industry simply because all bets are off. No one quite knows what's going to happen. No one knows what will or won't work, and I think that's part of what's brought around this huge selection of independent magazines is the people ambitious to see what they can do and achieve. You know, it's relatively simple now to make a magazine. The only question around it really is how good are you going to make it? Creatively, it's fantastic. Business model is the issue.
Ibrahim Neme, founder of Beirut-based print publication The Outpost, impressed everyone at the conference with his magazine, born out of the Arab Spring and set on making a change.
We're an activist magazine and we have a cause and we're in it for that cause, not for the money. And the idea behind it is that we're trying to create a platform where to break all those narratives of impossibility that are coming out of the region, which attempt to portray the place as hopeless and helpless and where people are basically running around on camels, really. So yeah, it's trying to present a more hopeful and a more positive view on the region.
And Neme wasn't the only one to believe that indie magazines can and perhaps should make a difference. Here's freelance editor, author and publisher Sabine Cole's take on what an indie mag should be.
indie magazines should make a difference for the society. They should be a playground for ideas, for informations, for different stories that can't be published in classic media.
How can indie magazines really improve, and what do they need to do to survive?
I think designers should meet journalists. That might be the biggest problem they have, that the designers don't know the good journalists and the good journalists don't know the good designers. So a meeting like the IndieCon is a good possibility for both sides to meet each other, and together they can bring up really good magazines, because a magazine that just looks good is not interesting, and a magazine that is just a good read is not interesting. So both together they can really make a difference.
Sebastian Prinz from Froh magazine has his own ideas about what defines indie magazines.
All the people here are making magazines despite of the fact that they don't know how to actually finance it, and despite of the fact that they are risking some kind of their existence in doing so. So this is something that I find really, really impressive. And maybe I think a good indie magazine maybe is that indie magazine that has to struggle to find its readers and to really come to the next issue. But in the end, it's not about making money, but about telling a story.
Stephen Greger, founder of the biannual publication about magazines Gym Class, couldn't miss this event. What is it about print magazines, the medium, that really speaks to you?
I think there's something quite rewarding about producing something that is physical and tactile and feels like it will be around longer than something that may be published as an app or online. So think of people many years ago carving cabins out of trees, you know, in the forest to live in. It's quite similar. I think it's quite similar now, just you making something with your hands and crafting it and putting love and passion into it. So it's the creating something that feels like it is physical and going to be around for a while, and a record of what's going on.
The conference is over. It's been a long 2 days, and co-founders Malte Brenneisen and Urs Spindler take a seat under a tree in the garden to speak with me.
Bringing up this conference is just about bringing people together who are in love with magazines.
Actually, we are maybe not so much passionate about the magazines, but about the people who make them, because we really feel that there is so much energy in people who start a project and who do it independently, and that can somehow surpass a level where you can really start something new, and not only in the meaning of content and design, but also in the means of distribution, of how to build a community around a magazine. And that's something very interesting, and what we are very happy about is that we see that there are small networks starting to grow, and we've already seen a development from last year to this year. So I think there's a lot in motion right now, and yeah, it feels very good. In comparison to last year, the monster has really grown.
Sunday's Indie Mag Day concluded this year's conference with a celebration of the print medium and the official launch of the IndieCon Summer School's final project, a magazine published by a group of 20 students within 5 days. Whatever skeptics might say, independent magazines are blossoming and print is here to stay. We're excited to see what next year's conference will bring. For Monocle in Hamburg, I'm Marie-Sophie Schwarzer.
Thanks, Marie-Sophie. You are listening to The Stack. We will take a very short break now. Up next, I'll speak to David Pleasant, fresh from his trip to Iceland.
See that man sitting opposite you on the subway, lost in another world? Or the smart woman scribbling notes while having her flat white? Well, here's what links them. They're both listening to Monocle 24 via our robust new, upgraded and free radio app that simply and seamlessly lets you tune in live or download shows for later enjoyment. Come on, download the Monocle 24 app today. Stick on your headphones and have informed fun on the go. Monocle 24, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to The Stack with me, Ben Rylan. And from Hamburg, our constant search to bring you the best in magazine culture takes us now to Reykjavik, Iceland. That nation made up of one very large island and one tiny population of around 320,000. It tends to conjure up images of remoteness, of the extraordinary landscape, of glaciers and geysers, of barren unpopulated plains, and of dark endless nights in winter, followed by never-ending light in summer months. Well, this all might be true, but deeply tied into the culture of the people who live there, the Icelanders, is also their Icelandic language. And the act of storytelling, communicating, reading and writing is something that is felt everywhere in Icelandic society, from the ancient Viking sagas to near constantly busy printing presses. This tiny nation has a voracious appetite for the written word. To find out more about the Icelandic penchant for magazines, we sent our producer, David Pleasant, to hit the newsstand and also meet the editors and distributors that make this small but flourishing magazine market tick.
It is said that Icelanders both publish and read the most books per person than any nationality in the world. It is perhaps the need to connect to a seemingly distant outside world and the effects of the harsh climate that might be reasons. And you can see this forcing people into the great indoors to lose themselves over printed pages and material. But how is it that Icelanders consume print? Is the rise of digital media affecting the magazine industry here as it is elsewhere? And how does this tiny, isolated market survive? Many questions regarding this intriguing country. So first, why not start at the Imundsen Penin Bookshop and Stationers right in the centre of the capital, Reykjavik? On the first floor is a huge magazine stand, and that is where I found Brynjar Haldorsson, product manager for magazines and newspapers.
This magazine stand is our largest one. It's about 13 metres.
Maybe talk us through the selection.
These are
Danish gossip titles.
Just around 1,000 kroners. This one is very popular. Alt for Damenu, with a okay. Danish accent.
And then there's Family Journal.
Yes, that's here.
So are you seeing any trends with readers? You know, is it cooking titles? Are they doing very well in Iceland at the moment?
The cooking titles are going very well, but the most craze is in adult colouring books.
Colouring books,
yeah.
As a form of meditation?
Yeah. The therapy colouring books that you can see behind. The sports magazines, they're going up, I would say. For example, yoga seems to be popular now, and I have to order more of those. We have Runner's World, that's going up as well. Here are a couple of triathlon magazines.
And then below, finally, let's talk about the crosswords and puzzle magazines.
These are examples of Icelandic crossword puzzle magazines.
These are published in Iceland.
Published in Iceland by Icelanders and distributed by small companies to us, and then we distribute to the stores.
There must be a whole team of people who make these crosswords.
There's usually just one guy that's very eccentric.
Do you know this person?
No, but I've heard about him. He doesn't heard about them, but these are three or four companies, and they all have some eccentric guy who knows everything about the Icelandic language. And
so can you tell us the titles of some of these crosswords?
Yes, this is Krossgáturitið, Krossgátublaðið, Krossgátublaðifjöreptið, Nýja Krossgátublaðið.
The list goes on. So
yes.
How many Icelandic crossword magazines are there? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 published every week?
No, year. Three times a year max. These magazines, because the eccentric guy can't make any more.
It's impossible.
Yes.
That was Brynjar Haldorsson, product manager for magazines and newspapers at Reykjavik's Imundsen Penin Bookshop and Stationers, which has a very impressive magazine stand indeed. Next, I wanted to speak to a magazine editor. I wondered if this craving for the printed word showed itself in magazine culture too. I went along to meet the editor of a lifestyle and sustainable pursuits Icelandic language magazine.
My name is Guðbjörg Gissaradóttir, nickname Gigi, and I publish this magazine called in Iceland Í boði náttúrunnar, but we call it in English By Nature. It came about when we really wanted to start growing something ourselves, me and my husband. Of course, the first thing we thought of, okay, let's do a radio show, which might seem a little awkward, but we started there. And then after the first season on the radio show, it was very successful, and I thought, okay, what should I do now? And then this idea of a magazine came about, because I'm very curious about a lot of things, and somehow in a magazine I can kind of put everything in there. But here in Iceland, I thought the magazines were kind of very commercial. And so the paper is like a book stock. And
let's take a look at it, the current issue. So we've got a lovely cover of a van kind of parked up in a meadow, it seems. And yeah, you're talking about the paper stock. So you've chosen a quite thick paper, plenty of advertisers.
Yes, well, we put so much into it. I mean, it's like a very expensive print and so forth. And many people are like, whoa, how can you just manage in such a small country like Iceland? But when I go to advertisers, and I mean, this is not like a huge amount of print, so it's not like the typical thing they would advertise. You know, when I get to them, I'm very enthusiastic about this project, and I think it matters.
In Iceland's remote second city of Akureyri, a 45-minute flight from Reykjavik, the Amundsen Pennin store takes center stage in city life. The elegant 1930s former general store is the company's most spacious. Light fills the shelves and tables loaded with Icelandic and international book titles. However, it is the shop's vast magazine stand that dominates the entrance. I spoke to the ever-ready manager, who seems to be happy to go to extraordinary lengths to ensure that all customers get the magazines they want.
My name is Guðrún. I'm the director of the store.
Wonderful light space in a very prominent position in the town. So maybe tell us what we can see as we first walk in.
Here you see the big old house and the windows, and then you look at all the books. Just look over and I think it has a big wow factor.
And also on the left there's the magazines, yeah. That's very prominent.
Yeah. People are very interested in magazines about, you know, housing and so on. And of course fashion.
Can we go over and have a look at some of the titles?
Yes. So it's the Dennis magazines. I would say they are the most popular about interior. People come here, sit down and mostly take them. They can sit down, grab a magazine and read it. If it's cold outside, it is very often over the winter time and maybe snowstorm, then you can always see light in here, always open, no matter how the weather is. So you can always come in here, grab a coffee or tea or something and look at a magazine. So always warm inside here.
That need for warmth and a welcome distraction from the cold climes seems to have fostered a real yearning for printed matter. Every bookshop I've been to has been busy at all times of day. To talk more about magazines and the Icelandic love affair for them, I went to a central Reykjavik cafe to meet Dani Gisladóttir, a young editor, writer and self-styled content creator. Dani, having worked across many printed and web titles, is now about to pack her bags and leave Iceland to settle in Berlin. A good chance, therefore, to reflect on what it is about her own country that has influenced her.
When I went to live at my father's, I was in a really small town in the east side of Iceland. And in this one, we had one shop, and it's the country shop. It has everything, from food to clothing and everything you could possibly need. And they had a magazine rack. And so I would buy like every one. I had nothing else to do. I had like no friend there or anything.
Tell us what your kind of take is on the Icelandic connection to magazine culture.
There's this one magazine called Vikan, which comes out every week. And it's like the women in the countryside, it's their window to the city, or it used to be, and the magazines used to be our window to America and Europe. If somebody wrote it down and a graphic designer did something to it and it was printed, it must mean something and it must be true.
Have you seen things change, or do you still think people are consuming magazines, newspapers like they used to?
I think it's changing, of course, but we have a big appreciation for paper because we're a book country and we read a lot and we appreciate our books. They're like, instead of like some fancy lamp, we have a fancy book, you know? So I think that translates into magazines.
To the observer, it's quite difficult to see how having so few people is actually liberating. Yeah. Maybe tell us, you know, if you want to set up a magazine, for instance, if you want to print a magazine, is that easy here?
Yeah, because your cousin is the printer or your uncle is the graphic designer and your friend knows this awesome photographer and it's all so close by and we kind of help each other out and we're used to people building small things out of nothing, so we're used to chipping in and helping out. So I think that's why we have this mentality of everything's possible and that we can like manifest what we want to.
So a cultural connection to magazines that comes from a sense of isolation. This combined by an ease in doing business and realizing new ideas. Whereas a tiny market might on first inspection seem like a debilitating factor, it seems that Icelanders have grown accustomed to working together to overcome some of the challenges that nature throws at them. So many of its people, both young and old, have a fondness for those more tangible print products. And that doesn't seem set to change anytime soon. For Monocle, in Reykjavik, I'm David Pleasant.
And as if by magic, David Pleasant is here in Studio One with us now with a healthy crop of magazine material he's picked up on that trip to Iceland. Hello, David. Good to be here with you. You've got a bit of a healthy stack in front of you there. Where do you want to start?
Hi, Ben. I thought we'd start chronologically and do a little bit of a history lesson of Icelandic magazine publishing, a very niche topic that I doubt any other broadcasters spend much time on. But we're here at Monocle 24, of course, so why not talk about it? I thought we'd start with something from 1928 that I picked up in a backstreet bookshop in central Reykjavik. It's called Doktorin, which means doctor. And as I say, it's from 28, although this is a few issues stapled together. Have a look at it. What do you think? What do you make of it?
Did you actually say 1928? I mean, that's almost hilariously old. That was the year my grandmother was born. It's quite amazing that I'm actually holding a magazine from that long ago. It's obviously quite faded and a little bit rough around the edges, but it's quite an interesting cover illustration here. It almost looks as though it's just been drawn with a grey lead pencil, this rather sinister-looking man holding a map of Iceland with an illustration of what I assume to be is Iceland's central bank there.
Exactly. And what irony there. That's why I thought I'd pick it up. Obviously, a country recently out of a banking crisis. But I thought I'd pick it up just to show you the sort of, I don't know, the sort of, it's a very raw feeling of printing and magazine culture from 1928. But nonetheless, it's there, it's present. There's this kind of culture of satire, of wanting to get the word out in print. These pages, you know, they're scarcely 6 pages long and they're actually folded together. So to open some of them, we'll have to tear it with a knife. And you can hear it, that hasn't been torn before.
And that was just the norm going back to 1928. I mean, most magazines were printed in this manner. What was the reason for the pages being connected at the top like that?
I've seen it a few times before, and I think it's just ease. So you'd have a large sheet of paper, and it's just literally folded in 4, and then you'd unfold it or tear it with a knife, depending on whether the publishers or the printers bothered to staple it together on the spine. But I think a lot of the time, you just literally unfold this one piece of paper that would produce 8 or 12 pages of printed material inside. So I can sort of imagine people in the cafes of Reykjavik getting their knives out, tearing out the top of each page.
Tearing the magazine pages instead of really undoing the staples and reading your magazine like a giant map.
Exactly. More practical, I think. But going through, there's this sort of feeling of the importance of satire and how it's sort of basic, really rough drawings. And I'm sure if you looked at magazines in say, Germany, Britain or France at the time, you'd get something a little bit more sophisticated. So there's this sort of naivety about these drawings, but really interesting nonetheless that this tiny market, and it would have been even tinier back then in the 20s.
Quite interesting there. Let's move along to your next one there. I can see this one's got a bit of a pot plant as its cover star.
Exactly. A pot plant peeking out of a gap in the curtains. This is called Neptune, and this is issue 1 of Neptune, which is actually from last year. I believe the Neptune team is now on issue 2, but I have the first edition. It's a really nice thing, and it just shows how sort of developed the Icelandic scene is. It's a bilingual edition, both in Icelandic and in English, featuring interviews, features of people's studios, people's lives, people's interests, very much in line with what's happening in other cities from Berlin to Melbourne and so on. And the look and feel is very contemporary. It's very much like the kinds of magazines that we see on the stack every week. But it's Icelandic, and I think that makes it exceptional. And there's something of where it comes from in the design. So it's features, it's interviews, a really good thing. And I think it shows how vibrant the print scene still is in Iceland.
It's interesting, we were just saying with that first magazine we picked up from 1928, we mentioned there that back then, of course, it was more difficult for people to come up with photographs. So a lot of that was hand-drawn. And we have gone through that period where photographs were almost over-engineered. And now looking at this magazine here, the most of the photos in here look as though, I mean, they could have been taken with a smartphone or something. Not a lot of them had really have that that over-edited quality to them. They feel very rough and raw in quite an attractive way, though, I have to say.
Yeah, I think that rawness is definitely something that we're seeing. It's obviously manufactured rawness, and people might spend ages editing over pictures to get that perfect rawness and that sort of ready freshness that they want. But yeah, you're completely right. I think magazines in general, whether they're in Iceland or elsewhere, are going back to that sort of authorship and that sort of wanting to be fresh and new and novel.
Okay, let's move along to your final title then, David. Tell me about this one. It's got a bit of a nice field of flowers on the cover.
That's right. And I'm going to attempt to pronounce the title of this magazine. And please forgive me if I get it wrong. And we actually just heard from the editor, so I'd better get it right. We heard from Gigi, a lovely editor, magazine editor, who I met in Reykjavik. And you heard there in that report. It is called Ibodi Natururana, which means by nature. As she mentioned in the report, by nature is all about sustainable living, sustainable lifestyle and kind of escapades. And I say sustainable because really this is like a modern lifestyle magazine. I think everybody's got the sustainable message now. But I think in the back of her mind and the team at this magazine, they're wanting to encourage people to think a little bit more about their environment. There are programs to plant trees, to encourage meditation in the community and so on. So there's really a sort of, there's a feeling, there's a community behind everything that this magazine does. But it's also done in quite a sort of, not glossy, but sort of commercial way that she's managed to engage good advertisers. There's IKEA, Nivea, amongst other big brands, in this what I think is a really good, smart, intelligent and attractive magazine.
And so clearly this editor has picked up on this sustainable movement, which, as you say, is something that we've been hearing a lot about over the past number of years now, almost number of decades, really. But it really takes a different kind of approach to take a movement and make it into something that is beautiful and attractive and something that people really want to immerse themselves in. Do you think that's what this magazine is doing?
I think so. And it's doing it really well. And I was even speaking to Gigi, the editor. I was saying, you know, why not do it in English? Because it is only in Icelandic. And, you know, there was a certain kind of modest nature to her and many Icelanders. And you know, they don't think there's much appetite for this kind of thing. But, you know, looking at some of these spreads that are shot out in the meadows of Iceland, I'd be interested to get a soup recipe from Reykjavik, wouldn't you?
I would be very happy to get a soup recipe, especially if you're the one making it, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
And that brings us to the end of this edition 158 of The Stack with me, Ben Rylan. Many thanks to our guest today, David Pleasant, as well as Marie-Sophie Schwarzer, who reported from Hamburg. Our producer today was David, and our studio manager was Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, until next time, it's goodbye from me.